Good morning and welcome to All Sides Weekend, and this is The Book Show. We've taken a bit of a hiatus. We took August off, and we are back, and I'm going to steal a line from one of my panelists who just said this off mic. Can I just say how great it is to be back with these people for The Book Show? We are going to spend the next hour talking about what you might like to read, what our panel has enjoyed reading, etc. I'm Christopher Purdy, here with Chris Hickey from the Columbus Metropolitan Library, who comes with us every program and brings us quick picks, those titles from the Columbus Library that everybody wants to read. Chris Hickey will tell you how to jump the line. Cassie Rose is WOSU's book critic. There is no show without Cassie Rose, and her blog, which is indispensable to anyone who loves to read, is called thelongestchapter.com. And Nick White is back with us. Nick was on sabbatical and taking a hiatus teaching at Harvard, no less. Your mother must be so proud to Harvard. Right?
That was 2 years ago.
Yeah. That's right. But Nick White is back with us in the studio to talk about books. So Nick White, as I say, the panel is going to go around and give recommendations and talk about books that that you all love. What are you loving, Nick White?
Okay, so it's the beginning of a school year, and one of my traditions at the beginning of a school year is to read a craft book that I have not read before, or read a writer that I really admire talk about writing. And the book that I picked up that I've never read before, but a writer who I love, Haruki Murakami, his book, What I Talk About When I Talk About Running, which is a memoir about him training for the New York Marathon, but is also his thoughts and journal entries on what it takes to be a good writer. And I loved this book. I loved reading it, not least of which because I took up running 2 years ago. And I just really related to that a lot. He says that in order to be a good runner and a good writer, you need three things: talent, endurance, and focus. And I guess I've always instinctively known that, but like having him articulate that was really useful for me. I'm gonna hopefully have some of my students read this. And this is line from the book that I really like, where he says, writing novels to me is basically a kind of manual labor. Writing itself is mental labor, but finishing an entire book is closer to manual labor. It doesn't involve heavy lifting, running fast, or leaping high, but the whole process, sitting at your desk, focusing your mind like a laser beam, imagining something out of a blank horizon, creating a story, selecting the right words one by one, keeping the whole flow of the story on track, requires far more energy over a long period than most people ever imagine. And that's so true. As someone who both teaches people, mentors writers, but also is, you know, involved in writing myself, like that just really, really spoke to me.
Don't you think that that's what the key is about books about writing and authors writing this, is that they share really what everybody already knows that is a writer, but they need to hear it back, to hear the validation, to hear, because it is an isolating experience. You're there in
Absolutely.
Your room alone with your computer or your writing, but to hear, to read what others, what their advice is, what they're going through, to hear it back and to hear it expanded.
Yeah,
I think
absolutely.
Is valuable.
I think like as writers, we can sometimes feel like we're off on an island and just sort of like working away on our book all by ourselves. And the great thing about reading these books, joining a workshop, having people read your work, is that you realize you're a part of a community, and that eventually you want other people to read your work and have like responses to it. And you have to think about your reader and yeah, I think that's absolutely right. Like writing can seem like a lonely process, but really it does involve getting involved in community, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. A recommendation from Nick White, who was a writer, a teacher. He is on the faculty in the Department of English and Creative Writing at The Ohio State University. He has been teaching at Harvard and other places, and he is back with us giving a recommendation, What I Talk About When I Talk About Running, by Haruki Murakami. That is a recommendation from Nick White. This is All Sides Weekend. This is The Book Show, and this is Cassie Rose, who is going to tell us what she's been reading.
I'm going to start with a book called The Horse by Willie Vlautin, V-L-A-U-T-I-N. And when I started reading this book, I thought, oh my gosh, this is the book I've been looking for all summer. The good story, the great character, the period of time probably in the 80s or 90s. I mean, there are no cell phones. There's, you know, not the computers, whatever, but it's just a really good story. And the main character is Al Ward, and he lives on a mine claim out in central Nevada, about 50 miles from the nearest town and 30 miles from the nearest farm. And you get the idea that it's by choice. It's not because he has to. He's in a shack. He lives on coffee and Campbell soup. He's in his 60s. And most of the time during the day, he's writing ballads and playing the guitar. And one day, this horse shows up. He looks out the window, and it just is standing there in front of his shack, and it's winter and cold. And even though he takes water and food, it doesn't move, doesn't eat the food. And it has a swollen eye. It has a lot of scars. And over time, he begins to wonder if it's even there, if it's part of his imagination. Mm. So that's this main present line that's going on. And then during this time, we get where he's been in his life, which is a musician playing the casinos and the bars and the truck stops in Reno. And also, he's written songs. So we get the story of how he fell in love with a guitar. We get in his 20s with the first band and the lead singer, an older woman, and he falls in love with her. We get the period of time when he's down and out, and he calls his Uncle Mel, who comes and gets him from a homeless shelter, and his Uncle Mel, who owns the mine claim, and Al inherits it. And then we get the time when he's in his 40s and he's just sort of done with it. He's sitting at a diner and these two 20-year-olds come up to him and say, we want you in our band. We want you to write songs for us. And he says, no, I'm too old. And they go, no, we don't care because we've heard your songs. We've heard you play. It's one of the best parts of the book. But always the narrative comes back to the horse. What's he going to do about the horse? His car won't start. Here he has no options. And finally, in the end, what he does come to, it is the best ending ever. And I'm not going to give any part of it away. It fills you with hope about humanity. You, by that point, have gotten to really love Al Ward because he's a good guy. He's had some ups and downs. His songs have been recorded. He probably could have gone somewhere with it all, but he was perfectly content because he grew up in Reno. He wanted to stay in Nevada. This is just, it's a great book, and it's so good that I wonder, why have I not read this author before? And I went to look, and there are two books already now that I want to read, one called Lean on Pete, I think it's called.
Oh, I've heard of this book. Yeah. I think this book was made into a movie.
Yes,
Cassie
Lean
Rose.
On Pete was. Yeah. And also, that has a horse in it, too. And the reason it's so authentic, I think, is because Vlauten is a musician, and he's from Reno. But it's him. It's what he writes. It's his compassion. It's his that comes out in the story and on the page that really just that takes you, that you give yourself to his story and to his character that feels so authentic. And it's, you don't get a sense that he's trying to prove it, that the author is trying to prove anything about this guy who really is down and out, but really he's not down and out.
No. He's happy.
He's happy. Well, he's happy. Yeah. It's a really wonderful book. It's called The Horse by Willie Vlauten. And if you love this, hopefully, like me, you're going to be searching for more of his books.
Does the time frame of that book happen, like the main storyline of the horse, is it just like a span of hours when he like finds the horse that is sick and like is trying to help it? Is that like the main arc, or is it like, what's the time like of that book?
Well, it's days.
Days,
it's
I
several
see.
Days.
Okay.
Like he goes out to start his car. He can't get that, but it is to the point where I kept saying, bring the horse in the shack. Just bring the horse inside. It's getting cold outside. So it is over a couple days, and I would say maybe a week. And the friend that he has in the area that lives at the farm 30 miles away that checks on him every day had come about a month ago and said, I'm going to be gone, and you need to start your car every day, but I can't check on you. So he doesn't know whether this guy is there or not. So it does, I would say, over maybe a week or 2 weeks.
What you've described is a good book about good people, which I think in this day and age we need. So a firm recommendation for The Horse. Mm-hmm. Tell us, can you spell the author's name again?
Yes, it's Willie Vlautin, V-L-A-U-T-I-N.
Willie Vlautin, I'm writing that down. Write that down, everybody. Thanks to our own Chris Hickey, we often have all the books that we talk about on the Facebook page for the library that you can pass around, and that's thanks to you. Thank you very much for that.
You're welcome.
Chris Hickey is here from the Columbus Library. She brings us quick picks. Chris has been running the Whitehall branch temporarily because we miss you at the Whetstone branch. Come home.
Coming home soon.
You're coming home soon. Busy anyway. You brought us a big stack of quick picks. What is a quick pick?
So you were just talking about a good book about good people. T.J. Clune's new book is just that, and all of his books are that. But this is called Somewhere Beyond the Sea, and this is the sequel to his bestseller, The House in the Cerulean Sea. And so T.J. Clune was not planning to write a sequel, but one of the characters, a beloved character named Chauncey, who is the little green blob boy who has dreams of becoming a bellhop, kept speaking to him. And that coupled with the anti-queer rhetoric that he was hearing, he said, I really need to bring these characters back because I have things I would like to say. So this story is a little bit beyond where the other book leaves off. But Arthur has been summoned. Arthur is the caretaker of a house with magical children. So it's kind of an orphanage, but also they are going to live there. Their lives there. He has all kinds of interesting children with, you know, there's Chauncey, but also a 7-year-old boy named Lucy. Lucy is short for Lucifer. He's the Antichrist. And so this child has powers that are dangerous, but he's loved by Arthur. And so he's being brought up in this house of filled with love and acceptance. And it's just really interesting. The relationship between the two of them, where Lucy will say, I'm the destroyer of worlds, and he, you know, his eyes will turn red, and Arthur will say, well, not today, you're not. And just kind of a very gentle, calming presence in this boy's life. So he is summoned before a committee of the department in the care of magical children. They're not particularly caring. And they want to discredit Arthur. So Arthur is a magical being himself. He is a phoenix, the last known one in this world. And so they want to discredit him, this organization. They're frightened of the children and their abilities, particularly of Lucy and what he could potentially do. So they decide to send out another inspector to inspect this orphanage to see if it is, in fact, okay for children to be in. It is okay. And that's Linus in the first book was the inspector. Linus now lives with them and is in a relationship with Arthur. It's a beautiful, loving relationship. And I want to share a moment in the book that just, I had to put it down and cry after reading this part. It was beautiful. So Arthur is tormented during his hearing, and they basically goad him into becoming the phoenix, and the phoenix is a frightening creature. So this is Arthur. Until he saw the one man who wasn't running, the one man who stood with his hair whipping around his head, his shoulders squared, his eyes were wide, unsure as he looked up at the towering creature before him, but he did not back away. Did not try to run. Instead, he stood his ground, his tie flapping against his chest. Arthur turned around facing him. In what was only the second time Linus had seen the fiery bird since his arrival on the island the previous year, the phoenix lowered his massive head toward him. When it was eye level, it chirped, cocking its head as it blinked rapidly. Linus raised a steady hand, and the phoenix clicked its beak before nuzzling his palm, eyes fluttering. There, there, Linus said quietly. All this fuss and for what? You are good, Arthur, no matter what form you choose to take. This book is beautiful. T.J. Clune, he's brought back the characters you love. He's introduced some new ones. And he's hinted that there's a character based on Calvin and Hobbes. And there's a character based on J.K. Rowling. he's not a fan, and it's documented out there if you want to read more. But if you want to figure out who these characters are, I think you'll have a great time. It's a beautiful book.
We're all about,
he's always great.
We're all about beautiful books and good books, and this is All Sides Weekend Books, and we're going to take a quick break and be right back. Get out your handkerchiefs. Don't go away.
The candidates for November are set.
I know Donald Trump's type.
Between now and Election Day.
We are not going back.
A campaign season unfolding faster.
Kamala Harris is not getting a promotion.
Than any in recent history.
Make America great again.
Follow it all with new episodes every weekday on the NPR Politics Podcast.
We are back. This is All Sides Weekend Books. This is the book show. We are back. We took August off, but we are here and we are raring to go. I'm Christopher Purdy with Cassie Rose, Chris Hickey, and Nick White. We've already had some wonderful recommendations. They will turn up on Facebook, thanks to Chris Hickey, who does a wonderful job linking everything that's talked about today to the library so that you can take advantage of these wonderful titles. Nick White, you've got a book open. You're sitting to my left. So what do you got for us?
So I am recommending a book that just took over my life the last month. And this is This Strange Eventful History by Claire Massoud. Claire Massoud is a writer that I deeply love. I first read her a decade ago with her book, The Woman Upstairs, which was just such a wonderful book. I think a lot of people probably know her, too, from her book, The Emperor's Children. This is a grand, sweeping book. It takes place over seven decades, from 1940 to 2010. And it's about the family. Now, I'm going to probably mispronounce this family's last name because I did not listen to this book on Audible. I read it, and my French is horrible. But it is C-A-S-S-A-R-S, and so maybe Cassars or something.
C-A-S-S, like Sam,
S-A-R. C-A-S-S-A-R-S.
So, Carreras.
Cassaris. Cassaris. Okay. It's about this family, and it's narrated from, it takes place in 1940 about this family that lives in Algeria during World War II, or when the start of World War II, and then goes all the way through the Algerian independence, and their complicated, this family's complicated relationship to their homeland. You know, they're French, they were French settlers there, and what does that mean after the revolution? And it's narrated by the granddaughter from present day, Chloe, who is our narrator. And it gives her a really interesting perspective on this family, someone who feels a deep need to tell this story because she feels as if she can tell this story, she can kind of save them. They can, it can help them recover or rehabilitate. I'm summarizing this 400-page book very poorly, but it's the thing you have to know about this book is you will start reading it and Massoud is such a masterful storyteller that pretty soon you forget that you're reading words and you're just caught up in the story. It's that thing that John Gardner talks about in The Art of Fiction, that idea of the fictive dream. She is a master of that, where you just are going through decades, going through time, and it is just so, so gripping and cinematic and just pitch perfect. It felt like I had, you know, lived all these different lives when I've put down this book. It's everything you kind of hope a novel can be. It takes you to these romantic, intimate moments set against these broad historical things that are going on, and it's just wonderful. And I love the beginning of it because it really, the first line of this book, I realize we have a trend now of reading from the book, so I'm gonna keep this, but the first line of this book just is just so good. It begins with, "I'm a writer, I tell stories. Of course, really, I want to save lives, or simply, I want to save life." And like just immediately I'm like hooked. I'm like, yes, tell me everything. I want to know exactly what this narrator is talking about. Yes.
What is she? You said that she's trying to save them, save the family. What is she, or rehabilitate? What is she trying to save them from, or rehabilitate them? Does it have to do with the colonization of Algeria?
Partly. And it also has to do with the fact that this family, one of the things about this book that is really good by looking at it through the scope is you see characters stuck in these patterns. And it's like this way of trying to like tell the story. And if we know the story, maybe now we can move on from it and we don't have to keep spinning our wheels thinking about it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. It sounds like the looking for patterns.
Yeah, yes, yes.
That throughout the decades.
Yeah, yeah. And the narrator is so well positioned because she's heard these stories and she's like telling them and she's really unpacking it for us. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Claire Massoud. Now she's been around for a while. She's had a number of bestsellers, I think.
Yeah, that's right.
Very, very well received books. Is this brand new? The Strange Eventful History.
Yes. I think it was it published this summer, I do believe?
Yes. And it was long listed for the Man Booker Prize, but it didn't make the short list, unfortunately.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's a shame. Mm-hmm. I feel like this is probably going to be one of my favorite books of the year. Mm-hmm.
All the more reason to read this book. We look forward to getting to know that better. Thank you. A recommendation from Nick White on today's All Sides Weekend Books on 89.7 NPR News. I'm your host, Christopher Purdy, and Cassie Rose. What do you got for us?
The next book I want to recommend, it's called Life After Kafka. It's by Magdalena Platsova. And it is about Felice Bauer, who was the fiance of the first fiance of Kafka, and whom the book Letters to Felice is about, because he, during their engagement, which was 1912 to 1917, he wrote her more than 500 letters. Her letters did not survive. So nobody really knows that much about Felice Bauer because the scholars really haven't spent much time with her. What's interesting about this book is that it is called a novel, but I think that's probably because some of the scenes have had to be imagined because there's a lot in here that the author includes about her research. For example, a chapter of interviewing Felice's son in the retirement home in the Hudson Valley, which is fascinating, or her own story about being in Sarajevo and coming to New York City and studying Kafka. But where it starts for us is that we come to know Felice in Geneva in 1935, I think it is, where she's with her husband and she's with her children, and they've left their beloved Berlin. Now, they get a visitor from Grete Bloch. Grete Bloch was a good friend of Felice and of Kafka, so there is some history there, which the book does devote some chapters to. Grete was the negotiator really between Franz and Felice Bauer because they had a lot of difficulties. And in the letters to Felice, that's where most people have learned that Kafka struggled to commit to the marriage, and he was tortured over, you know, giving his love to someone when his love was literature, essentially. And he was working at an insurance company in Prague while she was in Berlin. But anyway, and also there was rumor out that Grete Bloch had fathered a child with Kafka, which came from a biography. But anyway, we see her in Geneva. They then emigrate to the United States in Los Angeles. We see a scene in Paris where she is. She meets of someone that she knew in Berlin. All of these scenes we get. But what is interesting is about how the author then comes in and gives this kind of factual research information. So it's really more than a novel. It's kind of a kaleidoscope that transfers between years and cities, Los Angeles, New York, Paris. There's this one scene where the adult son of Felice is on the subway in New York in 1946, and he sees these students reading The Trial in the Castle. And he knows his mother had a long relationship with Kafka, but she never talked about it with the family. And he knows she has the letters. And it's a secret, though, she has kept. But in that moment, the author brings it out, what it is like to be a family that is connected to literary history and to be a child or a grandson or whatever of someone who is so famous. It's really a fascinating book. And I don't know that I've captured it well enough, but I have written about it on the blog in more detail, so which might give you more about it there.
Cassie Rose's blog is thelongestchapter.com. It's important for anybody, and a great read, enjoyable for anyone who loves to read. Thelongestchapter.com makes me want to go out and read Kafka again after your description.
Well, it does, and it drove me to a new book that has come out, his selected stories, that I love because by Mark Harmon, and selected stories of Kafka, because it, with every story, he gives the context of what was going on in Kafka's life in the beginning.
Yeah.
There's also a great 65-page biography of Kafka in the beginning, which, of course, Felice is part of that, too. So that's also a book that I mention on the blog. It really does. The thing about life after Kafka is you just can't... It resonates with you afterwards. You want to learn a little bit more. You keep thinking about Felice. She did not want those letters published, those 500-so letters published. But her son really... he just convinced her she needed to do it. The New York publishers were coming after her. And certainly when they were published in 1960 in Germany, they were it was a literary event.
Sensational.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't Kafka famously have some of his books, some of his work burned? Wasn't that like part of his...
Well, he asked Max Brod, who was the biographer, to destroy his manuscripts and his letters. But Max Brod did not do it.
That's right. That's what
Smart.
I did. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Life After Kafka. Thank you, Cassie Rose, for that recommendation. If that's not a quick pick, it sounds like it should be. Quick picks from the Columbus Library with our own Chris Hickey. What do you got for us?
Matt Haig's new book. Now, he wrote The Midnight Library, which was a huge hit. His new book is called The Life Impossible, and I absolutely loved it. I know Nick is reading it now, so we can talk about it. So it's about a woman named Grace, and she is a math teacher. She's a retired math teacher. And during her time teaching, she befriended a woman, and then the woman left, and they did not stay in touch. But this woman has since died and left Grace a house in Ibiza. And so Grace, she's retired. She's a widow. Her only son had died many years before. So she doesn't really have anything going on. So she buys a one-way ticket to Ibiza to see what is going on with this house, and discovers that her friend disappeared under mysterious circumstances and wants to investigate what happened to her. And in this house, there are pictures of her with this man, and he's a disgraced marine biologist who's now a diving instructor. And she connects with him, and he says, if you want to know what happened to your friend, you know, we're going to go diving in the middle of the night. And so she thinks, well, this is a really terrible idea, but I'm going to do it anyway, and has an experience in the ocean that she cannot explain, and that has altered her reality. And I don't know that I can say much more about the plot without giving more away, but it's a fascinating take on, I think he has a lot he wants to say about the environment. He talks about the oldest living organism on Earth, and this is fascinating. I'd never heard of it. It's the, what's it called? It is the Posidonia. And it is seagrass that's over 100,000 years old. And people will come to Ibiza to see the seagrass. And so what happens to her happens around this seagrass. Mm. So environmental saving Ibiza is very much a theme of this book. But another theme of this book is healing and forgiveness, self-forgiveness. She has a lot of guilt over her son's death. She feels that she's somehow responsible. He died when he was very young, in an accident. But, you know, like Matt Haig's The Midnight Library, it's just, it's a profound, very unique story. And it's another one that will make you cry. It made me cry.
I am 10 pages in.
Yes.
This is like was next on my TBR pile, and I'm so excited to be reading this book. Like you, I haven't read The Midnight Library, but I saw it in every bookstore. It was something.
It's a quick pick. I think
it might still be a quick pick. It became one.
It became a runaway bestseller.
Yes.
I'm going to be talking about this book, leading a book club at Gramercy bookstore October 8th at 6:30 to 7:30. I think there's tickets still on sale. You can like RSVP for that online. I'm so excited to be doing that. As you know, Gramercy Bookstore is like one of the places to be in Columbus. Linda Cass has done such a good job with that bookstore, and I'm just so excited to be reading this book right now, because like you were saying, a book about healing, it's a book about grief in various mm-hmm. ways, and like it's the right book for me to read at this particular moment, because I just lost someone in my family mm-hmm. and like this is a book, like already 10 pages in I feel myself like, oh my God, this is like it feels like stepping into like a soothing bath almost.
It really is. And Matt Haig has been very open about his own mental health journey, and he's written a memoir about that.
Oh, I didn't know that.
He has, and he's taken some of his experiences within that journey and put them into this book. So there's inspiration from himself and his own experiences in here.
And remember, Nick White will be hosting a discussion about this book at Gramercy Books October 8th.
October 8th, 6:30. That's when we'll start. You can go online. I think you can go on the Gramercy website and learn more information mm-hmm. about
that. Just Google
that.
Gramercy Books. It'll come right up. Yep. Yeah. This is All Sides Weekend Books, and I want to ask Chris Hickey to give us one more quick pick before we take our next break.
Okay, let's talk about, this is a book called Entitlement by Ruman Alam, and he wrote Leave the World Behind, which was a bestseller and also a movie on Netflix. And so while Leave the World Behind was about external threats, Entitlement is very much about internal threats. Mm. And he is calling ambition is the internal threat by our character. So it's about a woman named Brooke. She's a Black woman. She's taught in the Bronx for years. And she leaves that to work for an 83-year-old billionaire who wants to give away his money. And so Alam wanted this billionaire, his name is Asher, he didn't want him to be a villainous billionaire. He wrote him with his own ideals. So he made his money selling office supplies. So he didn't do something that, you know, hurt people or took advantage. You know, he kind of did it in a I don't know if it's a pure way, but he kind of insinuates to that. But Asher is somewhat likable, and you could probably say that his motives are sincere. So Brooke comes to this world and is in charge of figuring out like who is worthy to receive these funds. So there's lots of people asking for money, and she has to kind of sift through. There's an interesting moment in this book where she reaches out to a group that she has admired and thinking, oh, I can give them this gift. And they say, no, thank you. Like, that is not, we are just fine the way we are. And that exchange is very interesting. So as she's in this world, she becomes entitled. Like, she sees these fancy, she's experiencing these fancy dinners, these fancy clothes. So how does this change her? That's very much a theme of this book, is the proximity to privilege and wealth. What does that do to a person? Does that distort who you are? And he very much goes down the rabbit hole with that in this book.
Entitlement.
Entitlement by Ruman Alam.
Ruman Alam, and we have to take a break right now. We'll come back and talk to Cassie Rose about recommendations. This is All Sides Weekend Books. Chris Hickey just gave us another quick pick from the Columbus Library. Don't go away.
The candidates for November are set.
I know Donald Trump's type.
Between now and Election Day.
We are not going back.
A campaign season unfolding faster.
Kamala Harris is not getting a promotion.
Than any in recent history.
Make America great again.
Follow it all with new episodes every weekday on the NPR Politics Podcast.
We are back, All Sides Weekend Books. I'm Christopher Purdy. Delighted that my panel is back. Delighted the show is back. We took August off. We are here. We are back with you. Cassie Rose is WOSU's book critic. Nick White is professor of writing, creative writing English at the Ohio State University and a very, very prolific author. And Chris Hickey is with the Columbus Metropolitan Library, brings us quick picks every program. I just want to mention, we seem to be in a nice renaissance of indie bookstores opening up in Central Ohio. Gramercy Books has I guess, led the way for a couple of years over in Beckley, doing very, very well. $2 Radio is, we've had him on the show a couple of times. Yes. Mm-hmm. There's one in Arlington and now in Clintonville on High Street near Como, I think. Clintonville Books. I don't think they're open yet, but I walk by every day and I'm kind of salivating. I'm waiting for them to open. So I'm delighted that neighborhood bookstores seem to be coming back here in Central Ohio. That said, Cassie Rose, if I go to a neighborhood bookstore, what should I buy? What do you got for us?
Great segue.
I know. That's my good one for the day, right? Thank you. I've had a few problems with that. Thank you, though.
A book called Orbital by Samantha Harvey. It is shortlisted for the Ursula Le Guin Prize, so that's science fiction, but also it's shortlisted for the Booker Prize, and which is interesting. And it's a small book, but it's absolutely fascinating because it is about six astronauts that are on the space station, like the International Space Station. This is sort of a last, the program is being phased out. But really what the book is about is it's not about the astronauts. It's about being in space and being put in their view and looking out the window and what they experience in 24 hours. So that is orbiting the Earth 16 times. So seeing within 24 hours, 16 sunrises and sunsets. It is looking at the Earth where they don't see any borders, any separation. They see mountains and they see oceans. They don't see countries. One of the things that they do see happening is a typhoon that is building and moving toward, I think it's Indonesia. And one of the astronauts remembers being on his honeymoon on an island and getting to know one of the fishermen in the family and wondering what will be happening to them. We get to know their schedule, how it's important to stay on the 24-hour schedule. Not that it's regimented as much as that it keeps them grounded in a way to a sense of life and routine, what they eat, what they share with each other. The fascinating part is the perspective that we get from them. There really is no plot to this, but the plot is seeing the Earth and being in the universe and seeing how, I would say, how insignificant the Earth is, but how significant it is. Mm. Because they're seeing it from the universe surrounded by the stars. They can see the sun and the moon. And, you know, so for us, we get that perspective too, and about how small our lives are, but yet also how significant, which comes through again with the typhoon and the worry that he has over the fishermen or over Nell, who is an astronaut. And, you know, they are able to communicate with their family and connecting with her husband, who is on a sheep farm in Ireland. It really is this beautiful book that you come away from, and it's like only maybe 180 pages, with this marvelous perception of this incredible planet that is truly a miracle, and yet also the vastness of space and what it's like to be in the space station. It's really a well-done book. She does pull you into it, and I highly recommend it.
Would you call it meditative?
On a certain level, yes, I would.
Okay. That's good for these days. Yes.
Yes, it is, because it pulls them away from the Earth, it pulls us away from the Earth too. And because how we are with them. And there are no frustrations among them. We don't have the problems up there. Because, you know, when you think about it and you're in that small space, you can't bring your personal lives into that small space.
It seems like it would be very timely to read this book now, considering there's astronauts in space who can't come down.
They can't come down.
Right? Yeah. And what they're experiencing right now.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You do get that. I was very well aware of that. And that gives really much of a profound feeling to this book. You don't, you know, she isn't coming at you to have any, you know, demanding you have any kind of a feeling, but you, through the perception of it, it is the awe of what we have here and that we forget. They see the clouds, they see the sunsets, they are measuring the light that comes from the earth, those kinds of things, which, you know, doesn't occur to us.
You know, it almost sounds as if it would take an experience like that to get people to really understand what's happening to the planet. You mm-hmm. know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm not being a soapbox here, but the way you describe that book and the way the meditative aspect, but the realistic aspect of, I mm-hmm. mean, it's right, you know, you're how many millions of miles away, but it is right in front of you in mm-hmm. a perspective that nobody else gets. Maybe 50 people in the world have had that kind mm-hmm. of perspective and experience, not through a telescope. So the book is called Orbital by Samantha Harvey. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And that's a recommendation for Cassie Rose. And you know I've said this for years. If Cassie Rose says read the book, read the book. Trust me, Orbital by Samantha Harvey. And read what Nick White likes, too. So what is Nick White and Chris Hickey? I mean, that's why they're on the show every week, every month.
The next book I'm going to recommend is actually a novella, and I have a story behind why I'm recommending this novella. 15 years ago, picture it, younger Nick White was taking Michelle Herman's novella class, and we read her book, we read a book in that novella class called The Age of Grief by Jane Smiley. Mm. Loved that book. Went to AWP, which is the annual writers conference, and who do I find wandering around in the book fair but none other than Jane Smiley when I was working at the literary journal that we have at OSU, the journal table. And so seeing her walk in the book fair, I immediately said, Jane Smiley? And she walked over toward me, and I immediately became starstruck and said, oh my gosh, I love your book, The Age of Grief. We just read it for this class I'm taking. I thought it was so beautiful. And she said, how old are you? And I said, I can't remember how old I was, but I think it was in my early 20s. And she said, oh, no. You're much too young to appreciate that book. I think you need to read my other novella, Ordinary Love. I think that would be like right up your alley. And so I resisted. I didn't immediately go read it. And after finishing the Claire Massoud book, about this family and this multi-generational novel, I still wanted to read another book that was about a family. I wanted to read another, you know how you get an itch for a book. And so I couldn't devote beginning of the semester 400 pages. So I decided, you know what, at long last, in the final year of my 30s, I am going to read this Jane Smiley novella that she recommended to me. And listener, I am here to report, it is fabulous. It is so good. It is narrated by this woman who is this older matriarch of this family, and her children, her five children come home, are visiting because one of her sons is just returned from a year abroad in India. And as he's back, he's changed. But also you begin to learn as they begin to talk and reminisce, as families are wont to do, that she did this thing years ago when they were all still children. She had an affair on their father, on their husband, on her husband, and that broke the family apart. And they have never asked her about this. It has been like the one thing that they've not ever spoken about. Well, this is the time they begin to speak about it, and you begin to learn this story. And the husband figure is really, they subsequently got a divorce, but the husband was not this bad guy. He was really interesting, and you get this complicated portrait of a person, of a family, and it's done in 80 pages, mm-hmm. and done through scene, done through action, done through the right detail at the right time. She is truly, I think she wrote this around the time A Thousand Acres was published, mm-hmm. or just recently won the Pulitzer Prize, which if you've never read that book, is a great novel about three sisters and this farm in Iowa. It is essentially a retelling of King Lear. A great book. This novella is equally as engrossing, and you can read it in a night. So, or it's Ordinary Love by Jane Smiley.
Jane Smiley. Now, you mentioned also Michelle Herman earlier, at whose name every knee should bend.
Yes. Oh, my gosh.
If you love to read and you love to write and you want to study those things.
Michelle Herman, who has an essay collection forthcoming.
Really?
Ooh. Yes. I'm not sure the exact publication date, but it'll be early next year, I do believe, an essay collection. Super excited about. Michelle Herman, wonderful writer, wonderful teacher. If you've never read anything by her, do yourself a favor and pick up one of her books.
Just retired from The Ohio State University.
Yes.
She's dancing now.
She's dancing.
Her
essay collection talks about that.
Yes, and I must say, if you want to read one perfect novella, Missing is novella by, it's an early work by Michelle Herman. I'm missing. Just read the book.
Oh, well, I'm going to do my favorite now.
Okay.
My favorite of hers is her retelling of Chekhov's The Lady with the Pet Dog, A New and Glorious Life.
A New and Glorious Life. That's
if you've never read that novella, that novella is beautiful. Just so well done.
Glad we had a chance to sort of celebrate Michelle Herman because she's dear to a lot of us here at this table. Anyway, Michelle, we love you. So, where are we? Oh, Chris Hickey, give us a quick pick. We have 7 minutes left.
So I'm going to just share something that is not a quick pick, but I want to put this on everyone's radar because this is a local author. It's called Something in the Woods Loves You by Jared K. Anderson. Cassie Rose and I got to hear him speak at Gramercy Books, and it was wonderful. So this is a mental health memoir, but it's also about nature. So during a painfully dark time in his life, he stepped away from his job and made it his full-time job to get well. And so how he started his journey by taking walks. And each chapter is about a particular flora or fauna that he comes in contact with in these walks. He highlights local parks, Shale Hollow, Gallant Woods. And I actually went for a walk in Gallant Woods, and it is absolutely I'm going to walk in all of these places. There's a blue heron on the cover, and that is where he starts his journey in the winter. And he talks about the blue heron. But my favorite piece so far is when he talks about the sugar maple. I'm going to read something super quick. I am fast. I can do it.
You can do it. I believe in you.
You believe in me. Yes. We could do it. I stood at my back door and studied the branches of the sugar maple in the cemetery, wondering if I had the aptitude for tree climbing, wondering how long before someone called the police about a grown man dressed like a toddler in a gray t-shirt and gray sweatpants climbing a tree in the cemetery next to a rusty fence. I smiled. I was not brave enough for that stunt. So I summoned up my willpower to try a different kind of stunt, a quiet one. I reached for the branches of a very uncomfortable thought. What if it all works out in the end?
Oh, I want to know more. Oh.
It's a beautiful, and he's a poet, and so his turn of phrase, the writing is beautiful in this
book. Are
these
all locations in Ohio?
Yes.
Parks?
So he lives in central Ohio.
Okay, good.
So he talks about places that are accessible to you. So if you can have an immersive experience by reading this book.
It's called Something in the Woods.
Something in the Woods loves you. And the art on the cover is beautiful.
Chris, you also have a TikTok account too.
Do
you still post on your TikTok?
You're so cool.
I
don't even know how
to
do a TikTok account.
It's called Hickey Picks.
Yeah, I wondered if you're going to talk about the little walks and stuff on your book talk.
I'm doing little book talks for every. It was just a challenge I did for myself. I'm doing little book talks for every book that I'm reading this year, and I'll probably do it next year too.
I'm ignorant.
Yes,
how do people find that to make sure people know about it?
I guess you just get on TikTok and you search Hickey Picks.
Hickey Picks. Mm-hmm.
Hickey Picks. Okay.
Love it.
Hickey Picks. Boy, that's a t-shirt. Hickey Picks. I'm writing that down. How about Cassie Picks? We have a few minutes left.
I'm going to recommend a book called The Prince of West End Avenue by Alan Eisler. It is a vintage paperback book. It came out in 1994. It's a great story about the Emma Lazarus Jewish retirement home in Manhattan, the upper end of Manhattan, and they're all putting on the play Hamlet. And unfortunately, the director who is also playing Hamlet has died, so now they have a new director, and he's changing everything.
I don't mean to laugh.
No, it's true. It's funny. It's okay. Very funny, and it also has this underlying, though, moving parts too, but, you know, Ophelia's throwing a fit because she doesn't want to have a Christian burial. And so, and then there's some rebellion, and they're all at a delicatessen, and there's upheaval. That's the fun part of the book. The narrator is Otto. He is a great voice, a great person. And he is unsettled because the new therapist coming in, he feels like it's a reincarnation of his first love, Magda, in 1916. So
not so bad.
So these characters, you know, they have lived through World War I and World War II. So they're all richly drawn. They're very delightful. But also Otto's story is very intriguing. He was a poet back then, and his book was published in 1916. And Rainer Maria Rilke wrote him a letter. And that letter has gone missing in the retirement home. Great book. It's called It's called The Prince of West End Avenue by Alan Eisler.
Nobody can top that, so I'm not going to try. This has been All Sides Weekend Books on 89.7 NPR News. I'm Christopher Purdy. Thank you, Cassie Rose, WOS book critic. Thank you, Chris Hickey from the Columbus Library. Thank you, writer and professor Nick White. Thank you all for listening. Check out, we are usually the third Friday of the month at 11 o'clock. All Sides Weekend on 89.7 NPR News.